Foodie Films is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Foodie fans, are you ready for a spooky film? Well, that's not necessarily happening this week, but I am getting in the Halloween mood with Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. That is, I think, the only time you're going to hear me sing it this episode, but it had to be done. Maybe right now, you know, I'm trying to, again, just trying to get into the festive mood. Right now, you could possibly be hearing someone's blowing leaves right outside my apartment window. So, you know that. I gotta get some candy for the children, for them, for the trick-or-treating, or just candy for myself, because I love candy. I'm almost internalizing Jeff Goldblum right now. Anyway, I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm not sleeping well ever since Europe. Jet lag for an old man. But I wouldn't trade it in for all that delicious food I ate over there, but I won't yammer on about that again. So, here we are. This episode, I speak with actor Heather Drew, actress, actor. You can choose what's politically correct. She also works plenty of different, you know, roles in the crew positions in the world of video production, and she also teaches people how to die. How does one do that if they haven't died themselves? I don't know. I didn't know, but then Heather kind of, explained it pretty well. But then, you know, she didn't want to give away all the secrets because then why would you take her class? So here we are with Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, and Heather and I, well, you know what? I tell you everything in the episode. So grab a bucket of tomatoes and I don't know why I said that. Just, hey, enjoy the episode. So what's happening, Heather? Long time no see.
It has definitely been a long time, but I'm doing well. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. We went to college together. Go Roadrunners.
We didn't even have a football team, but
we had a few.
Yeah, we had some other sports. Tennis was good, I heard.
I mean, I think we were both. You were in a sorority. I was in a fraternity, so yep. we were Greek in college. But here we are. I contacted you because I know that you're obviously involved in the world of film, and I thought, you know, it's October. I think a lot of people on the Cage Club Podcast Network have been doing like a horror movie every week, but I was away, so I had to record a few before, but now I'm back from, I was over in Europe for a little bit. But I think horror, and you're one of the first people that comes to mind because I see your posts and it looks like you're killing it, no pun intended. So here we are. So tell us about just like what you do and, you know, just get the foodie fans up to date with your career.
Yeah, so guys, I'm Heather Drew. I am an actress, and I'm also an on-camera death and injury coach, which means that I teach people how to die on camera and how to be injured safely. So if you ever see a zombie or a vampire or a werewolf in a movie, I may have been the one to help out. And I'm also food related because I do craft service on the side. So that's my side gig.
There we go. So there's a little food tie in there. So you teach people how to die.
Yes, I do.
You're in front of me. You're living, I think.
Breathing.
Breathing. So you've never done. So
yes,
how does one? I was working on a feature, independent feature film, and all of a sudden they needed extras to play terrorists in them, and we're in the Sterling Mines out in like West Jersey. You know, they filmed. I know they filmed like the Zoolander Cole scenes there, and
I actually think I know where that is.
Yeah, and so I'm playing a terrorist. I look like a lumberjack terrorist in the scene, but nonetheless. And then they're like, okay, when your gun runs out of blanks, die. When I end up seeing like how I die, I end up like looking like a rabbit falling backwards, and it's just so I guess that long-winded setup. How do you teach someone to die? What does that entail?
What does that entail? Well, I do Skype sessions. I go on set, and then I do a class called Dying for the Camera. We're all teaching, but it depends on what the death is, and also like say it was a gunshot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, are you a day player or are you a lead character? The deaths are going to be way different.
Yeah.
Are you being shot in the head or are you being shot in the stomach? And I also always tell people, like, what kind of gun, know what kind of gun it is, because your reaction is going to be dictated by what kind of gun is shooting you.
Wow.
Know the direction of the bullet, and I don't want to give away too much.
Okay, yeah. Please, yeah, I won't, yeah.
But I'll give away one little tidbit.
Okay.
If you know which direction the bullet's coming and where it's supposed to hit, put your finger and poke that area and see how the muscles contract there and see what happens.
Good
trick.
So it kind of
helps
trade.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So that's pretty interesting. Like that's that I didn't think. So now it seems like you could go just show up to a crime scene. You could break it down. Now you'll go full CSI on us.
Kind of. I studied forensic pathology and then I studied movies and I kind of integrated them. So. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you into like crime shows too and everything like that? Like what's you work in, you know, horror and that and suspense and everything like that. Is that your favorite?
It's my favorite, and that's kind of why I got into it. Like, I'm an actress over all regards, where commercials, television, all that stuff, but my heart is in horror and sci-fi. All
right.
And I started actually because I was dying a bunch of times in movies, and then I had studied forensic pathology a little bit in college, and I just kind of continued my studies because people were telling me, oh, you're really good at dying. Because I would tell them, oh, you can't do that because the body doesn't do that when that happens.
Yeah.
And I realized, I was like, oh, wow, I am kind of knowledgeable on this.
Yeah.
So I ended up working with a casting director and turning it into a full career, because I was like, oh, that's something people do. They teach people how to die on camera.
Yeah, that's pretty. I knew there was
and
people.
I
mean, it makes sense. I knew there's actually a sound professor that I had at Ramapo, Brian Hughes, and he was somebody. He knew how to like professionally how to fall.
Mm-hmm.
That was something. Yeah, that was.
Fall.
So I knew that existed. So yeah. I mean. Teaching someone how to die and like just like all those twists and turns that you have to do when getting shot by a bullet, or obviously all the different ways. What's the craziest thing you've had to teach someone to die from? Is it like a bullet
gas
wound, knife wound,
chamber?
Like gas chamber?
Gas chamber. It was I forgot the name of the movie, but it was a period piece and they got sent to die in the gas chamber.
Ooh.
And that was a pretty cool one to do. And the hardest one I think I've ever done is drowning, just because you can't communicate with the individual once they go underwater and submerged. And another thing I want to say is when there's more than one person, when there's a victim and an attacker, that can get very complicated. And that's when I really say, like, you need a death coach there for safety. You need someone to help out.
Sure.
Yeah.
So how, like, are you working with the choreographer a lot as well? Or is that you are the you know?
I usually come in at the tail end. It depends on how big that fight scene is.
I gotcha.
If it's a small struggle, then I, of course, can do it. I will definitely talk with the director beforehand to figure out what's needed when they initially hire me. So that'll all be discussed.
Yeah. Cool. Well, yeah, because, I mean, so what did you study at RAM? Because you said, like, you were theater, and right?
I studied to own my own theater.
Okay.
And I had studied a few classes in forensic pathology. There was a class called Death, Dying, and Bereavement.
Oh.
And that was just an extra credit class because it was at, like, 2 p.m. and not 8 a.m., and I took it. And that's kind of how it started. I'm not a morbid person, but, like, I guess I like the macabre. I love horror movies. I love monsters and villains and stuff. So, to me, that class is kind of exciting, even though it was a little dark.
Yeah.
And I found that I have an interest in that, and I'm trying not to be creepy, but that kind of segued into it.
What was your first introduction into that world? Like, when did you, like, we graduated, and then what was, like, you know, kind of like the first gig you worked on?
Gotcha. The first gig I worked on in horror was a movie I shot in South Jersey, and one girl had to be shot by a bow and arrow, and she was getting shot in the back and lurching forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was like, no, you got to arch your back. Your muscles are contracting back. So that's kind of the first time I ever coached someone. And the director was having problems the whole day with that. So I was like, if you don't mind, would you excuse me? Like, I have the suggestion. And they kind of let me coach that day.
Wow.
And that was kind of the first time I started coaching. And then I really was like, let's make this career. Let's do this right. Let's learn everything and then go forward. So that's kind of how it happened.
That's awesome. And then, like, so from there, it definitely seems the world of, like, independent horror seems like a tight-knit group of people. Like, I see that, you know, you're going to festivals. Tell me about that and just, like, what it's, you know, like, are you working with a lot of the same people from crew to actors, or just how that world is?
It's a tight-knit community, but it's very welcoming.
Okay.
The thing with horror film festivals is you make horror movies and sci-fi movies because you enjoy it and you love them.
Yeah, it's the passion.
The passion. So a lot of times when people are going to these festivals, you're going there and you have a common interest. Like, you love these movies. They're awesome. Even the terrible horror movies are still enjoyable. They're still so good. So what I do is I'll go a lot of festivals just to have a good time and see the movies.
Sure.
And you do end up meeting people. And I have gotten some wonderful friends. I'm actually shooting a film called Identity Check that's shooting November 3rd. That's where we start shooting. And I had met him years ago at a festival. I have good friends, Lindsay Serrano and Manny Serrano. Lindsay is the director of a movie I just shot that I acted in called Misunderstood Monster. It's a horror comedy. It's fantastic. But it is kind of incestual where you do get to work with each other in horror. For other genres, of course, you have to go through many more channels, casting directors, things like that. But with horror, a lot of times they'll write parts for you if they know you.
Awesome.
It's really, really awesome because they're like, oh, you're a cool friend. I have a part that you'd be perfect for. Of course, you have to be able to pull that part off.
Yeah, of course.
But if you're good and do this as a career, it is very open and welcoming to get parts and to work with other directors and producers. You meet them directly there.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine, like you said, like, you go to festivals and whether even the films are good or bad, like, I feel like it's a genre that there's a lot of, like, homages in, so that's, like, maybe just even, like, a lot of Easter eggs that you're catching in these films. I mean, definitely in the film we'll be talking about today, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, there's by far, I mean, it starts off by letting you know, like, the birds, like, that's, like, what this is coming from, but, so in the world of production, are you acting more? Are you coaching more? I see your post and I'm like, this is awesome. I love seeing someone that I know, like, getting a decent amount of work.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe can I call it constant work? I mean, it seems pretty fruitful.
It's paying my bills.
You're working. Exactly. I saw that you were working a teleprompter recently.
Yeah. That's my favorite.
That's your favorite?
In a way, because it's getting.
Do you pull, like, an Anchorman and put the wrong thing and then?
No, never. It's like playing a video game.
Okay.
So that's why I love it. Acting is, of course, my first love. But when you get hired for teleprompter, you're also not there for many hours, and they basically tell you to play a video game. So I do enjoy that.
That's awesome. I mean, so it just seems like clearly you love the world of production and just like anything to be around it, you're game for. Like you said, you've done crafty as well.
Any day on set is a good day. I would say
I
it's
like
a,
that. That's
yeah.
great.
It's a 50-50 split because sometimes production's busier and sometimes acting's busier. It's a Jenga game because I am freelance production. I work with a bunch of clients, but I never know what day I'm gonna have. I just got two calls last week and I have three jobs in a couple days that I didn't have yesterday or whatever it was. But acting, I always say, comes first. But again, I also have to be very selective with acting roles. So.
Has one ever conflicted with you've taken a one job and then all of a sudden you're like, like another one came up that you're
I had that happen a couple of times, and knock on wood, every time the one job has been moved. I have. Yeah.
I'll give you a
Knock on
knock as
wood.
well, yeah.
I have missed many vacations that I've missed, but I've been so far pretty lucky that any jobs that were worth it, let's say like a good acting job or a good production job, never happened to be on the same day and actually film and not get postponed or moved.
See,
Usually production gets moved.
I have the opposite. I have such bad luck when it comes to it. I take a gig and then all of a sudden then I get a call like the day before for another gig on like the same day or whatever. Or it's been quiet. I'm like, you know what? I mean, I enjoy to travel. I'm like, I might as well go somewhere. Work's been quiet. And then just this recent trip, I was away and then the like right when the first weekend I was away, I got an email saying, like 4 days next week. I'm like, nope, I can't because I am away.
I would say the one thing with me is luckily, if I had something conflict, I usually have the one that I really, really want to do or the client that I really trust and I feel like I would choose them over it. So I've never had too much of a conflict. I've only had my heart torn once. That was a film I really, really wanted to shoot, but again, last minute, the production got moved. And it turned out I was like, fate. Fate.
Before we get into the film, let's just talk a little bit about food. That's just kind of like a staple of this show. So, I mean, you mentioned you've worked, you've been crafty. I mean, I know a bit about that, but for the foodie fans, explain what crafty is and just the purpose of crafty and just, I mean, just the world, even just food on set, you know?
Crafty really is taking care of the crew and the cast, providing breakfast, lunch, and snacks. And a really good crafty, like, I also have tissues, and I have cough drops, and I have emergency packs if someone doesn't feel good. But majority of the job is just serving food, but it is a lot of fun. And I really enjoy it, and I also like, I know what people like, so I will pick them up. So if I'm on a job again, I'll bring it for them, and they love it. Like, you're their favorite. You're like, oh, you brought Doritos for me? Just for you. I got them just for you.
Ever have it like a weird crafty request?
Weird.
Or just
No, just like
no.
flavors that maybe I can't get. I'm like, I don't know about that. Oh, salmon with caviar, and I got it.
The budget allowed for
Yes, it did. I just made it work. I squeezed by like $10. It was just on budget.
salmon with caviar. Okay.
Yeah.
When you're acting or working on, so what's like your ideal? Like, is it, do you like to eat something in particular? Is there like a meal that you're just like, or after a day of shooting, you're just like, you're craving something or anything of that nature?
That I'm craving after set if I have allowed myself not to snack all day. Because
That's
the
the tough
pastries
part.
I get, woof, they're good. Yeah, staying away from the pastries can be difficult. Sometimes there's this black bean burger that I absolutely love from a place called Positivity. It is so dang good. So that's like, if I have a long day and if I'm anywhere near there, I will pick that up, go home, enjoy that.
That's definitely the crafty table is a temptress. She it is an island of just. I feel like there's a, tends to be a decent amount of sugary snacks on there. Something that'll.
Oh, I have a candy table.
Yeah,
I'm
it'll make you
known for
crash. Oh,
my candy. I will have Swedish fish, jelly beans, everything you can think of. I make sure I get the salty, the sweet. There has to be something for everybody, so.
yeah,
And
that's
there
true.
always has to be chocolate.
All
Chocolate
right.
and coffee.
Well, let's get into. I mentioned the film Attack of the Killer Tomatoes came out in 1978. This movie I haven't seen in a while. It's hilarious. I think it doesn't get the love that it. I mean, definitely it's a cult film. Right?
Oh yeah.
That's. I mean, just even the whole title sequence. They're selling ad space during it. It says based on the best-selling novel The Tomatoes of Wrath. I mean, what do you love about this movie?
There is not one moment where they didn't insert some type of joke, even if it's in the background.
It's
so consistent.
Consistent's better. Yeah. Berating sounds negative.
No, berating's great. For this movie, it's bad. But, like, the thing I enjoy is, like, even the song, Puberty, and you hear the theme, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Yeah, the songs. It's a musical.
It is. I didn't remember that. I literally just rewatched it, and I forgot there were two huge musical numbers.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stop laughing. And then so many references to so many other films, and then they had Lois and Clark in Superman, and I was just like, well, I love this movie.
Yeah. All of a sudden, I was just like, what's that hanging out of his jacket? And then you hear those, up and away, or whatever. Yeah. I mean, it starts out with, let's see if I can even read my own handwriting. It starts out with a woman getting killed by a tomato, right? In the garbage disposal, there's a tomato.
And, it pops out of and rolls on the floor, and she screams bloody murder as the tomato rolls towards her. Before we know, it's a killer tomato.
Yeah. And what is, I wish I was, I was trying to find out, like, what do you think that the noise of these smaller tomatoes, they're like.
They had either the worst or the best Foley artist, and Foley artist.
He had a fun time. I mean,
God, he had a blast. And then when they're in the meeting scene, and the file document, I think, is like, pfft. So they're all making raspberry sounds like farts. It's just 100 million sounds of farts within 1 second.
Yeah, and that military meeting in the room that's way too small.
Yes.
And that's just, yeah, this movie is just, like, I think it's more, I don't know if there's, jokes per minute. JPMs, that's what I'm going to call them now. But after the woman's attacked, it says, in 1963, Alfred Hitchcock made a motion picture entitled The Birds, a film which depicted a savage attack upon human beings by flocks of the winged creatures. People laughed. And then, in the fall of 1975, 7 million blackbirds invaded the town of Hopkinsville, Kentucky, resisting the best efforts of mankind to dislodge them. No one is laughing now. So, I mean, it's this movie right from the bat is saying, remember that movie, The Birds? I mean, they said The Birds came out in 1963, this is 1970, so 15 years later. So it's still a movie that's fresh on people's minds. I don't know how many people these days, I mean, even from our generation, have seen The Birds. What do you think of the movie The Birds?
I love the movie. It's a classic.
Yeah.
But I think, like, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes is just one big parody of everything you could think of.
Yeah.
So starting off with a classic movie, you can call it a horror movie, even though it's not bloody and gory.
Yeah.
It's a classic horror movie. Going, okay, we're going to take this, we're taking this iconic movie, and we're going to let you know we're just going to make fun of everything, and this is not off limits. So we're going to put this in there. Nothing is off limits.
I mean, as far, like, it feels a bit, I love Mel Brooks movies, and it has that, you know, especially like a Blazing Saddles almost vibe of that. Blazing Saddles was just a complete, lampoon on the Western, and this is that for horror. I mean, the two biggest horror movies, I mean, maybe you know far more than me, but that, I mean, they're talking about The Birds, and then there's clearly that Jaws, scene that was like more like Jaws 2, because they're on like that, like similar pontoons that they're on in Jaws 2.
Oh, when the kids are floating and the tomatoes are bobbing in the water.
Yeah, bobbing in the water, and the girls fall in. And
I didn't even think about that reference. You're quite right.
But did you catch any other, like, definite or maybe just any kind of references for this film? I mean, you said, like, there's, like, the Superman, but was there any, like, horror, maybe, that as a horror, I mean,
Oh, that's a good question. And I'm sure if I scrolled through the movie, I could find some off the top of my head.
I think there might be a psycho kind of moment in there, too.
Yeah, there definitely is. Oh, I'd have to... I know there's a bunch, and...
You're kicked out of the genre of horror from now on, Heather. You're fired.
We've got Bird... Well, I'm trying to think of what was made before then.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it's...
That's true. When is the golden age of horror? Is there
Most people say the 80s when slashers came out. Because before that, there wasn't really any slashers.
Yeah.
We had no Michael Myers, no Leatherface, none of that.
Okay.
Smart horror has been the past 10 years.
Give me the top smart horrors. It's a genre I don't know, I'm like aware of, but I don't know much about.
Like the Babadook.
I have one on... It follows.
It follows. It follows was slow for me. It was so slow. But you have like Insidious or just in-depth storylines.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see, a lot of those movies have had they've had a continuation where you have The Conjuring 1, 2, now 3.
Yeah.
Insidious 4, which actually all of them are really good. If you haven't seen the Insidious movies, they're all great.
Is that which is the one that's gone off into like the Annabelle, and there's also then the Nun?
The Nun, yes. Okay, so they're all based off of, not the Warrens. A family that collects possessed artifacts in their basement, and that family, they're going off of artifacts from there. So like the Annabelle doll was something that they had. I'll cheat Google it in a second.
Okay.
But they're all interweaved. They're all intertwined together.
Gotcha. Do you have any specific scenes from Attack of the Killer Tomatoes that you're a fan of? Does any really?
The Hitler scene made me laugh really hard. It was so wrong, but so funny.
Yeah, this film, it's directed by John DiBello. He like wrote all the songs, and then
I just remember. Okay, yes, so when the helicopter crashes in the beginning, which did you know was not supposed to happen?
I read that on IMDb trivia that it ended up costing them like half of their budget or whatever.
It was like apparently all the budget that they had combined beforehand, what they thought the budget was going to be, and that was even more than what they intended to spend, from what I heard. So, yeah, this was supposed to be a super low budget. Like, you see some scenes, and there's just, like, a blue curtain background, and it's supposed to be a press conference, and there's, like, 10 people. Like, the only scene that had a bunch of extras was at the end when everyone was dressed in a Halloween costume at the stadium.
In San Diego, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they just, all... like, everyone come.
Yeah.
Your neighbor and your neighbor, yeah, and bring whatever you want.
And they said, wear the weirdest things you own.
So people were just there for free. I don't think they had to pay them.
Yeah. Yeah, so the fact that that's one scene that I actually saw that was like available to play on YouTube. So let's play that scene for you.
The tomatoes are coming, Gerald, they're coming! My God, did you see that? A tomato flew right into
us. You didn't
see
anything. You didn't hear anything.
Pilot's still in there.
Forget about the pilot.
You can't
come over here.
I can't believe him.
Just too incredible.
Kamikaze tomato.
Tomatoes can't fly.
Yeah? They can't eat people either, but they're doing one.
All right, Governor, question. Jim, go over there and talk to that sheriff and find out what the hell's going on. Get over here.
How bad is it?
Well, sir, I definitely don't think it'll fly again.
I'm not talking about that, you wiener. What about the tomatoes?
Oh, well, we found two more bodies near the main road, but we pushed the tomatoes back to the north end. I don't think any managed to bust loose.
They better not have. I want this thing contained.
I understand, sir, but nothing seems to stop them. We tried chemicals, bugs, bullets, nothing seems to work.
Look, the president wants a complete investigation.
We can't let this out. People will
panic, that's what. You know whose ass is on the line? Yours, mine, and the entire ag department.
What if the president wants an investigation?
He'll get his investigation, but we'll keep it quiet. I've arranged for the most obscure generals, the most obscure scientists, and to head the investigation, this man.
I don't recognize him.
Nobody does. His name is Mason Dixon. He hasn't worked since the Bay of Pigs.
Is there any sign of the problem elsewhere?
Not yet. I've ordered the entire GD3 program shut down.
Wait a minute. Isn't that Jim Richardson, the press secretary? What's he doing here?
The president's got him keeping an eye on the investigation.
Why him?
Because he's got a vegetable garden, that's why, with peas and carrots and squash and tomatoes.
That sheriff tells me there are reports of incidents like this all over the county.
Oh, bullshit. One knot spots a flying saucer, and pretty soon everybody's shaking hands with little green men.
God, who would have thought? All we wanted was a bigger, healthier tomato.
Look out, here it comes again!
So that's one of the earliest scenes in the movie. It pretty much goes, it's like the woman's attacked, there's the investigation at her department, and then it's at this grounds that I love, that it's the Department of Agriculture. I feel like, you know, that's also, that's funny in its own sense that, I mean, now you have shows like even Stranger Things that it's like the Department of, what would that be? I mean, that involves like electricity and...
It's not neuroscience.
But it's just funny, all these, like, smaller government departments are now, you know, because it was always, you know, Department of Defense is always involved or something like that. And this is the Department of Agriculture. And they're just these, at that point, I think some local cops and a few federal agents. And it's just chaos. And like you said, that helicopter crashes, and that wasn't supposed to happen. And they even said, like, pieces just missed.
Yeah.
Like, some people could have died on this. This movie maybe wouldn't have existed.
Well, the guy pulls him out, and like, that's for real.
Yeah.
He really does get pulled out to save his life. And I know I read that they did like two ad-lib lines, but when I first watched the movie, I didn't know that this crash was not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
So when someone said like, oh, did you see the tomato hit it? And I was like, no, I didn't. I didn't see a tomato go into the helicopter. And then when I found out what happened, I'm like, oh, that's why, because that wasn't supposed to.
Yeah, exactly. And then the, like, on the spot, then the director was just like, okay, let's work that into it somehow. I mean, it's just pretty easy. They're like, did you see the tomato fly into it? These tomatoes, but that's the whole thing. These tomatoes start out as regular size, but then they just grow and grow, I guess. And that leads to my favorite scene, which I love. You referenced, it's the one character I wrote down. His name is Sam Smith. He's the disguise expert.
Mm-hmm.
And so when...
Oh, it turns into... Yeah.
Yeah, and his final disguise, I mean, he just... At first, he's a couple... He's like George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and then Adolf Hitler. And then, I think... I mean, the main character, his name is Mason Dixon. And... He is given this ragtag. Well, they're not much is expected of him, and then he's given this ragtag team of a disguise expert, a swimming expert, I wrote it down. Underwater, so you have a swimming expert and an underwater expert, and then you have just like the final guy he meets up with that just parachutes down and never puts his parachute back in his bag the rest of the film. But I love the disguise expert and the fact that he dresses up. That Dixon tells him to infiltrate the tomato camp, and he dresses up as a big tomato. And the way he gets found out is when he's eating a hamburger. He says, "Can I get some ketchup?"
Yep,
that's pretty awesome.
That's pretty iconic.
There's like a lot of great little lines in here, like even the first, right before that small military meeting, there's just a couple of generals talking. He's like, oh, where'd you get that medal from? He's like, oh, from the three-legged race like the last camp or whatever. Like this, the little jokes.
There was a couple ones about the Japanese that weren't a little
insensitive.
A little insensitive, but they were funny. And back then you can get away with them.
Yeah, it did. I mean, hey, you throw some insensitive jokes and like someone dressed as Hitler, it makes me think of Mel Brooks.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, this movie, so I guess it ended up, it was a $100,000 budget. I guess that's what it ended up being with that helicopter crash. And then it made like around $400,000.
Oh, wow. Plus, it's a cult hit, so I'm sure, like, even new generations are watching this movie.
I think there's been three sequels.
There was a cartoon show.
Oh, there was a cartoon show.
I watched that.
This was a movie. I think I brought it up somewhere. I think it was on the podcast. If not, nonetheless, this is a very, like, I think, iconic poster to me, because even as like a little kid, it was like a little scary in a way. I was like, you know, like tomatoes with like these jagged teeth on it, and that totally set me up for not being disappointed, but totally and thinking it's a different film, because then it's just these tomatoes, and then the big tomatoes are foam tomatoes, and they don't have mouths. They're not mutant tomatoes in the sense of that, you know, nothing like that.
Yeah, I forgot the original one was just comedy.
Yeah.
Even with the name, it was straight up parody slapstick comedy.
Exactly. And so the one other poster that makes me think of is a movie like Tremors. That's, I mean, would you consider that horror? Is that, or is that more sci-fi, comedy sci-fi, or...
It's a subgenre of horror.
Yeah.
It is a bit more sci-fi. But there are so many different levels of horror. Like, I said, slashers before.
Yeah.
You have horror comedy. You have B-movie, monster movies. There's so many different things. So,
yeah.
It's, I put that in there.
Yeah, and that, because that cover, that was one that I would always, like, walk by quickly at, like, Blockbuster as, like, a little kid, because it was just these this huge mouth, sharp teeth, like, underneath. I mean, clearly taking away from, like, Jaws as well. But then in the, you know, when you watch that movie, not that it wasn't still scary at some points, but it wasn't nearly, like, the image, point being the image on the poster, just like this movie, was just very deceiving.
Yeah. Not every horror movie has to be scary, like the others.
Yeah, not every, yeah. What are, do you have any favorites of that? I mean, I'm when it comes to horror, I'm definitely, like, more towards, like, the Hitchcock end, and, like, I'm not a gore person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big gore person. That, to me, like, I mean, are you a fan of, like, the Saw franchise?
I love the Saw franchise, but okay. I also find it funny. Like, coming from the worlds where I see behind the scenes...
Mm-hmm.
I know someone was in the background with every take screaming, more blood! No, the blood has to, more of this! Like, I could see how it's created.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I wonder, how did they create that? So instead of being terrified, I'm like, how did they film that? How did they do that?
Mm-hmm.
So I look at it from a different perspective where I'm just kind of, how did they pull that off?
Yeah.
So that's why I enjoy those.
What do you... Watching this film, I mean, what do you think as far as its effects? I just did quotes when I said effects. I mean, like, clearly, you know, there's some, you know, there's someone that was just rolling prop tomatoes most of the time. I think the two big, like, as far as, like, editing tricks that I saw, at one point there was just a bunch of, like, a time lapse of that they were probably placing tomatoes all over bodies, like when they were when they're in the supermarket, or reversing, someone rolled a tomato down you know, a set of stairs, but then reversed it so it made it look like they were chasing somebody upstairs. But
yeah.
I mean, did you, when watching this film, is there anything that you took away that you're like, oh, that's, I guess what I'm looking for is, or what I'm asking is, it's spoofing and it's a satire and a lot of things. Did you see anything original from this film? Did they?
I would say just story alone.
Yeah.
Like, special effects, everything was handmade, and I can appreciate that. And on a shoestring budget, and they know that they had a funny script, and if they had some actors were serious,
mm-hmm.
and some were not, and the ones that were serious were the thread that really weaved it together and made
yeah.
it work. Because if you have all these funny things happening, like, you know that tomato was rolled by someone's hand. There's no, it's not a special effect. It's just
yeah.
terrible, like, even the set design was simple. It wasn't meant to be this grandiose thing. It is what it is. It's funny. And I appreciate how minimal it is, but pulling off a good story that they thought, hey, this script can work. Like, these lines are funny. These jokes are funny. If we do this seriously, like, we know we have $5, but if we can pull this off, and it really did work, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very curious. I couldn't find any specific, maybe you can think of some others, but the song at the end, so you've got the song, Puberty Love, right? That's, Puberty Love. Oh, fun fact, performed by Matt Cameron, who became the drummer for Soundgarden and then Pearl Jam.
Pearl Jam.
There you go. That's like something for our generation. Fun fact. It made me right away go, oh, Mars Attacks totally stole this. That like a song ends up defeating, you know, this is not the first, I mean, it's War of the Worlds. It's, you know, ends up being what, just the common cold or whatever, is just the bacteria in general ends up killing the aliens. But this was, I can't think off the top of my head any other like horror films or sci-fi films that use the
sound.
Well, that use it like a specifically like a song, like the fact that the song to defeat. I guess the most recent you see, was it A Quiet Place?
Yes, that's a brilliant, brilliant movie. That falls under smart horror.
Yeah. John Krasinski.
Oh, brilliant! Jeez. I couldn't believe he like acted, directed, wrote, produced.
Jim from The Office.
Did that.
He was just the whole time sitting at those desks every day. There were some dark thoughts going on in Jim's head.
I actually had a friend of mine who worked on that, and he was telling me some of the behind the scenes and how there was a highway that was actually in front of the house, so they put dirt all over it, and then they hung up all those lights, and I think it took them like a couple days to take them down and put them up, and they had to block off this highway that looks like it's just farmland.
Wow.
And I feel like, what?
There could have been like another farm to find somewhere, but...
Apparently that was a spot. I don't think it was very used highway. Like.
Sure, okay, yeah, one of those backroad country highways. But yeah. That's awesome. That's a fun fact for that film. I'm just also looking... This film also made me think of Doctor Strangelove as well, just as far as the military mocking. Because it really... it's like the gags in the film you've got... Or just, again, what they're spoofing more even than horror is, like, I mean, they have the voice dub going on for the Japanese scientists, so that makes me think of, like, Monster Godzilla in that world. And then we've got the pokes at the military and the press. I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, as a woman and working in production and just, I mean, even the genre of horror, I mean, they make that... There's, what's the, her name? It's Lois Fairchild. When she's put on the mission, he's like, oh, you're smart. You got a great ass.
Yeah.
Like that.
I mean, it's a comedy, so I'll let it go.
Yeah.
I will say this. When I show up on set, they either say two things if they don't know who I am. They'll be like, one, oh, you're hair and makeup. Or two, you're an actress. So sometimes I am the actress, but I'll be associate producer sometimes on some projects. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, I'm not the hair and makeup. I'm the associate producer. But they'll think automatically when they see a girl on set, she's an actress or she's hair and makeup 99% of the time.
Is in your world, I'd say, I mean, when I was working in reality TV and on other shoots, it was close to 50-50. Like, I mean, but what's your experiences as far as gender? You know, just gender equality as far, you know.
Yeah, I've seen a lot more in the past. It's been about 10 years that I went and started film.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot more DPs, female DPs. So females behind cameras and a lot more producers being female.
Cool.
Most of rig and grip, lighting, all those people usually are guys.
Yeah.
They do have to lug heavy equipment, but then again, so can I if I have to.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've actually seen a couple sound girls just the past 2 years. Before that, it was male dominated. But we're getting in there. We're getting in there.
That's gotta make things easier because I know definitely times I've had to do sound and like mic people up. It, you know, it can be a little uncomfortable because you're asking someone to run a mic up their shirt or it can be a bit intimate. So that's gotta make it a bit easier to have some female.
Yeah.
You know, sound operators. But, I mean, is there... just looking.
I will say another time, if I'm the only female on set, I had one time where... It was a while ago, I worked on a Netflix series, and I was actually a set decorator. Or, I'm sorry, I helped with set decorating, and helped in the art department.
Okay.
So one of the girls had to do a scene. She was a vampire, and she had to show her breasts. And because I was the only other female on set, they asked me to leave my position for the day, go help her, like, put on the robe every time they yelled cut, because I was the only female there. So I wish there were more females on set, but sometimes I'm the only one.
It's, yeah, I mean, just in that like vulnerable moment, just to have, I mean, a bunch of, I mean, number one, you're in front of camera, mm-hmm. so that's got to make things awkward, and then just to have like a bunch of guys, it's almost like, it's like a, you know, it's a semicircle, and it just, yeah. it's got to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, she had asked, she's like, I need a female with me. So yeah, like, I'll help.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely makes sense. Just looking, I mean, there's just, like we said, I love just little lines here and there, when like on the radio, Puberty Love is playing, but then the it cuts to the news and it says, in Newark, New Jersey, a man was eaten by a BLT. So a little shout out to New Jersey right there.
Bacon, lettuce, and tomato.
Bacon, they say bacon, lettuce, and tomato. They have a shot of San Francisco, like the trolleys, Alcatraz in the background, and it says New York City.
Yeah.
It's just, this is a film that, I mean, we played that one clip for you. This is a movie that you just need to watch. And it's on Amazon right now. So if you have Amazon, check it out on Amazon. It's just, there's just so many great little, like, constant jokes throughout this film. I mean,
it's almost like, you know the scary movies that we put out a couple years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just parodies of all things. Think about it. This is a 70s version of the scary movies.
Yeah.
Except that it's not just off limits with just horror. They went for everything. Politics. They went for even like pop culture with the radio station. Puberty. Yeah. That's another aspect, going through adolescence and all that stuff. They really touched on everything. Every 1 second was another joke.
The one other little thing I read in trivia, but I just love the way it was written, was it said, most of the cast had never appeared in a movie before. Several never acted again.
The bad ones.
It's just so... I mean, that's... As an actor, I mean, how often do you... Is it... A kind of, you know, like we touched before, and you said that on that you work with, you know, the same people, you know, often, or like that people will write roles for other people. But do you see it as a pretty revolving door of actors, or just people that just...
I will say it's a revolving door. I will say that a lot of people start in horror. Like Johnny Depp started in horror. Jennifer Aniston started in horror.
Yeah.
So I think everybody...
It's a welcoming
forays
genre.
Into it. Yeah. To be honest with you, it's a lot of people's first jobs. First, okay. Second, and third.
Yeah.
So I'll say a lot of times people either quit or they realize, hey, it's really too tough to really be in this business, not just to get a role, have fun, and have done something in my life.
Sure.
So, yes, there are a couple people that I'll work with that are moving in their career. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times you'll see a person in one or two horror movies just because they got the job and realized this is not the life they want to pursue. Because
sure.
Acting is tough. In order to do this as a career,
yeah.
You need to do – you're going to have to do the commercials. You're going to have to go out for the auditions. You're going to have to meet the agents, take classes. You're not going to get anywhere if you're not taking classes, because that's another way you can meet casting directors. My career would not be what it is today if I didn't meet casting director Pamela Kramer. She actually teaches the Dying for the Camera class. She teaches the scenes in it where
Pamela
I coach.
Pamela Kramer?
Yes,
okay.
With a K. She teaches an acting class, and she teaches the scenes. So I'll do the exercises, and I'll do the death scenes, but she's the one doing the acting coaching.
Okay.
But I used her... And she's helped me meet other people beyond just the horror and sci-fi. But again, if I ever wanted to work with them, I'm sure they'd be very open to allowing me to come to be part of their films if I'm right for a part.
That's awesome. Yeah, because, I mean, hey, it's, well, like, Hollywood is not, it's, I mean, just, I mean, movies in general, but you think Hollywood, it's cruel, it'll chew you up and spit you right out. Mm-hmm. But it does seem, not that working in horror is easier, but again, since it has that...
It's almost, more forgiving.
It is more forgiving, and I mean, you know, it's not clearly, I mean, you teach how to die. It's not just like, it's not like to say that working in horror is easier, but I feel like people can just like maybe be a bit more like ham it up a little bit, or is that...
B acting is more acceptable in some horror.
Yeah.
So we all know when we watch a low-budget horror movie that it may not be the best acting. And we can still appreciate an independent film. Now, there are high-budget horror films that are phenomenal, like The Insidious, Hereditary. You're getting Toni Collette. You're getting A-listers to be in these movies. So it's not all that way. But I, again, stress that horror movie acting, when you're first starting your career, they're more open to newcomers. And that they enjoy when their actors want to do this as a passion. And not all, but a lot of the beginning directors and producers will allow those passionate people to come in and work on their project if they don't quite have the experience and help build them up. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't really happen with a lot of other genres because they want people who are established. And horror is like, hey, you're not quite there yet, but let's give you a small part. Let's give you a couple lines.
Yeah.
It's not brain surgery. Run and scream.
Something I feel like I'm seeing more and more, I'll see if you agree with me. Do you think that comedic actors make good actors in the world of horror? I feel right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. If you can pull off horror, you can usually, or if you can pull off comedy, you have the facial expressions and you can just minimize that.
Sure.
And it'll register so much on camera.
Yeah. Like I see Bill Hader's going to be in the next It movie.
Yeah. What I also find is people who have impeccable comedic timing mm-hmm. understand pacing. And they understand. Okay. And we always say with horror movies, sometimes in scenes, you have to feel the music that's going to be there. Feel that tension that's going to build up. If this is the climax of the movie and you're sitting in the corner, now if we're shooting and you're just sitting in the corner, you're not going to know how to act. But if you have that music playing in the back of your head and you know this killer is coming around the corner and you're sitting, it kind of helps. And I feel like comedic actors have that pacing and have that structure to them.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's... Well, I think they are two, comedy and horror, I think they're two genres also that are very... that editing can make or break from.
Yeah.
You can have a dramatic actor one shot, you can have, The Godfather and just the slow push in, and Marlon Brando, I mean, I know I'm going with one of the greatest films and one of the greatest actors of all time as an example, but nonetheless...
Quintessential example.
Yeah. But just that monologue of just, that, or just De Niro Raging Bull, just that one shot and that just reading those lines. But comedy, I mean, you just and horror just really can be dependent on it can make or break it, just like the because you said like the pacing and just knowing that will definitely make a big difference.
Yeah. Well, I have two quick things to add. One, editors are magicians, absolute magicians. They can, like you said, make or break a film. And then the second thing, I find a lot of comedic actors are smart. If you can find the comedy and find the joke, mm-hmm. I feel like they can break down a script very well and can also find the subtle things that are scary.
Ah, okay.
So that's just a personal opinion.
I like
but.
That. Maybe that was one thing that worked for Mr. Krasinski because, he definitely came from an early world of comedy. And he was even just in a recent movie we covered of It's Complicated and his little looks. And in that movie, he was just purely, supporting character in that movie and just the awkward tension between the Alec Baldwin and Meryl Streep, like, affair going on in that movie. When he finds out just, like, his little looks and just taking the sip of wine at that moment, that just made it the scene that much funnier.
Yeah.
And then clearly in a movie where there's very little talking in a quiet place that he just structured, pretty perfectly. Mm. And I love that, his wife Emily Blunt was just like, yeah, I need to be in this.
That's
like
awesome.
When he was like, I'm looking for somebody and she's like, I'm going to be in this.
That's awesome. And he's like, yes, I would spend more time with you. They're cute. They're adorable.
They're awesome. They're a Hollywood. They're like a good power couple, I feel like.
I don't really follow celebrities, but just them together, they just seem so nice. And I'm like, oh, they found each other.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, do you have, I mean, maybe you could say one for each, the subgenres. What's the holy grail of horror for you and or sci-fi? What are we, top fives?
Holy grail of movies. Horror, I think the best one is Insidious. Ooh, sci-fi is tough. You can have Daybreaker. There's so many different movies. Underworld. My favorite movie of all time is not a great one, which actually supports why Attack of the Killer Tomatoes is so good. My favorite movie is Queen of the Damned. The soundtrack is amazing. Aaliyah is a great villainess.
Yeah.
It's not the most perfect movie, but I fully enjoy it. And sometimes movies are just meant to be enjoyed, and you don't have to break down like how things are shot exactly. Or I allow for flaws in films. I would take a better story over a little flaw. So,
I like that
preference.
That's good. Anything else to say about Attack of the Killer Tomatoes?
Puberty love.
Let me just look. We've got, it was in San Francisco. Oh, and I mean, I'd be also then remiss if just not bringing up the ending where they're just walking off in a field and then it starts and it goes down and then you've got carrots and the carrot is then speaks. The tomatoes didn't, well, they I think they communicated with one another, but they didn't speak human language, and the carrots say, "All right, you guys, they're gone now." So that's, I don't think a carrot movie ever come from any of this.
No, I think we just got
the tomato sequels. Well, I'll take it.
Makes me want pizza. Lots and lots of pizza.
All right, so again, check out Attack of the Killer Tomatoes on Amazon if you got Amazon. If not, I'm sure you can find it elsewhere. It's just, like you said, it's a comedy that, you know, we in the 90s and 2000s we had these horror spoofs, and this is like almost the godfather of them in a way, but then it goes for everything.
Yeah.
Everyone is a victim.
Know it's bad going in and enjoy every single moment of it.
All right, we're up to the segment of famous food scenes. So, Heather, I will put in front of you, pick one of these four that I have in front of you, and we'll go ahead and watch it.
All right, my hand's hovering over. I'm going to feel it. I'll feel which one. This one. I got...
What'd you get? See if you can read my handwriting. A Christmas Story?
The Chinese Dinner.
Do you remember this scene? We can watch it, and we're gonna.
Can we watch it?
Yeah. Let me just pull it up on the phone. We'll play it for you guys.
Tis the season to be jolly.
No. Not ra 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 la 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 la. Sing like this. Deck the halls with boughs of holly. Fa la 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 la. Try again.
Deck the hall with boughs of holly, ra 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 ra.
Stop! Sing something else.
Jingle bell, jingle all the way. All what fun it is to ride in one horsey open sleigh.
No! Stop! Kitchen, bring food for customers.
Oh, yes, it's a beautiful duck. Yes, it really is. It's but you see,
what?
It's smiling at me.
That Christmas would live in our memories as the Christmas when we were introduced to Chinese turkey. All was right with the world.
So that, I've been having these moments where also these famous food scenes kind of work well with the film that we just talked about, or just have a just something with recent news that it works well. But this, I mean, so it's the Christmas Story, Chinese Dinner, and I mean, hey, we just had a film that mocked and, you know, Asian, so there we go right there. And then we're keeping on with the holidays, with a, you know, Halloween to Christmas. And then even a slight horror element, I'll call it, of the chopping of the duck head off. But Christmas Story, I mean, what... Did you right away we started watching, and you said, oh, I remember this scene.
Yeah. So. It was funny because I forgot about the cleaver and the head. But instantly, once he brought the duck out, I was like, oh, I remember what happens. But this scene is also tied into the other movie because of a little bit of a musical.
Yeah, it's, I mean, this is a movie that I remember watching as a kid, and I thought it was, you know, because it takes place in, like, the 30s, I thought it was, like, an older movie. I didn't think it was a movie from the 80s.
Gotcha.
But did you ever have, like, a holiday experience like this? I mean, did you ever, I mean, we've, like, the I mean, the whole thing is that, what, that the turkey got ruined, so then they have to go to the Chinese, restaurant, but
I like that nobody else was in the Chinese restaurant on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Did I ever have something real?
Yeah.
I went to a pig roast, and seeing that pig on the pike was an experience. I wasn't expecting that one. So I would say when people started cutting the pig, that was a little bit much for me. I was like, oh, wow.
No more practical effects. That would be practical effects. No more.
Yeah, it was a real pig.
Yeah, it was a real pig. So.
I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I think it was 4th of July at my uncle's a couple of years ago. And I was like, wow, you really did it. But what I love in the scene from Christmas Story is the mom's laughing, and I have a feeling she just got the giggles from hearing them go like, wah, 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 for 4 hours straight. So I think those are real giggles. I don't think she could have helped that.
Yeah, I love the dad correcting them, and then even just then saying, the duck, it's smiling. And just like the staff wants to be nice and accommodating, and he's just like, oh, no problem. Like, it just, yep, chop the head right off.
And we wonder how vegan started. There you go. This is the scene that started it all, everybody. This is the scene.
You know what? Hey, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes made a lot of people into carnivores.
There you go.
This film made a lot of people into vegisaurs.
Vegisaurs?
Yeah.
Dang it.
All right, and on to the last segment, Gut Instincts. I kind of let you know before we started recording what this segment is about, but just as a refresher, I've got like 10 to 15 questions here, and just whatever, you know, whenever it comes to you first.
Gotcha.
Favorite fast food?
Favorite fast food? Blossom du Jour has this Midtown melt. It's made with like avocado and honey, and it's fast food, and it's delicious, and it's so bad for you. It's actually a vegan place, but it's not good for you. Midtown melt. It's in Manhattan. It's great.
Go-to drink,
as in?
Alcoholic drink.
Alcoholic
beverage. Libations.
Usually Red Bull and vodka. It's simple.
Red Bull vodka. Red Bull vodka. Keeps you awake on set, but you're not drinking on set.
We're not talking about that.
Favorite childhood snack?
I would say Dunkaroos, but my mom never let me have them. So those little Dixie ice cream cups that had chocolate and vanilla. Those are great.
Sweet or savory?
Sweet.
Sweet. Halloween's coming. It's the time for sweets. Favorite food city?
Ooh, Vermont. Pizza is amazing there. And they have maple syrup on tap. It's not exactly a city, but
yeah.
No, Killington,
yeah.
Vermont.
Yeah, oh, there you go, Killington. Yeah, Vermont. Vermont's a city. Who are we kidding? It's not... Vermont and New Hampshire should be one state. So... favorite cuisine?
It's pig. Wait, do you want like a...
Like Mexican, Italian...
I like Japanese.
Japanese?
Yeah.
Like sushi, or like, are we talking even hibachi? Are we going to...
All of it.
Have we been to Japan?
No, but I have to learn Japanese for my next movie.
Oh.
For identity check. So I really want to go to Japan. I want to snowboard in Japan. It's on my bucket list.
Ooh, cool.
It's on my bucket list.
Guilty pleasure food. So just, you know, that one, maybe, hey, craft services right there. You just, you know, it could be just picking out what's the food you're like, I shouldn't eat all that, but I just, you know.
Well, it would be probably Tostitos because I could go through the bottom of the bag in one sitting. So it's probably just the amount of Tostitos I eat.
Do we have a favorite type of Tostitos? Are we going with a scoop? Are we going with the restaurant style?
Oh, we're doing the regular triangle.
Yeah.
Tostito. No scoops because they don't have as much salt. It's just, you think you're going to get more, but you don't.
You're on watch, Tostitos. Favorite condiment?
Is peanut butter a condiment?
Sure.
Can maple syrup be a condiment?
Yeah, well, maybe a maple syrup. Yeah, maple syrup. I should have known. Yeah, just
hey, I got
put a
Canadian
tap
blood.
Right into a tree. Yeah, there you go. You got Canadian blood? Yeah, all right. Last, what is the last thing you ate?
Chocolate chip pancake.
Mm.
Yeah, it's good.
With syrup?
Yes, of course.
What a stupid question. What would be your last meal? And if it's a little too difficult, I've said to people before, you can make it into like a three course, you know, like a appetizer, entree, dessert, or whatever you want.
I got this.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. No mansplaining needed.
Mogul's Personal Pizza. It's a place in Vermont that makes the most glorious, magnificent pizza. I don't know what they do to it, but they put drugs or something in it because it's fantastic. And then cashew snickerdoodle ice cream. It's made with cashew milk. It's decadent. It is so good.
These answers. They're so detailed and just different from what I've heard before, and I'm into it. Do you prefer like dining in, dining out? Do you like cooking for yourself? Or
I prefer to cook for myself. I like cooking for myself.
Any particular reason? Do you consider yourself a decent cook, or just like meal preparations? Or
I'll be honest with you, when I eat home, it's simple and it's healthier. So I try to eat better at home, and then when I go out, I'll eat whatever I want.
Yeah.
So
go to a Jersey Diner menu that is just like 7 pages long.
Oh my gosh, it's so great. Yeah.
More just as there were jokes in Killer Tomatoes, there are options on a Jersey Diner menu. There's just that many.
I'm also very lazy, and when I'm hungry, I want to eat now.
Spirit food. What?
Ice cream.
Ice cream. Boy, you're just
ice cream.
Other people, I'm just like, I need to.
Because it makes me happy.
But is ice cream? Do you embody what ice cream is?
I'm as cold as ice. It's got so many different flavors.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you're in the mood for, it has. So I can just.
There you go. I'm into it. And last question. What is the greatest lesson you've learned in food? So it could be something from, you know, again, childhood, or just being on set and realizing that people need certain crafty.
It's nurturing. Honest, like, I know this sounds weird, but if you eat a good, healthy meal, you actually feel better. So it can be healing in some regards.
Oh, okay.
I know that, if we're going with lessons, I would say that, yeah, it can be, and it can also be therapeutic. Like, you have a terrible day.
Sure.
You go home. I love diet root beer. I crack open a diet root beer. It's the equivalent of someone having a six-pack. Like,
nice. Yeah.
It just relaxes me. So I guess you could say it can be relaxing too.
Diet root beer, black bean burger.
Yeah, that's my thing. I'm weird, I know.
No, I like it. Those are great answers. Well, Heather, you survived many horror films, and you survived, well, I don't know,
I haven't survived them all. I've been known to not survive many.
Oh, boy, okay. Well, that's, okay. Well, you survived Foodie Films Podcast.
Yes, I did.
Please, right now, like, tell people where they can, I mean, if you want people to be able to contact you, or see, like, your Instagram, or any, you know, plug away.
Yeah, you can always reach me at heatherdrewacting@yahoo.com. Please feel free to email me. Just put in the message who you are. You can find me on Facebook, heatherdrew.tv or .net. And I also suggest, especially since it is October, if you want to learn to be a zombie, there's a class, like I said, Dying for the Camera, starts October 23rd. It's a Tuesday at 7. It's taught by Pamela Kramer, and I will be coaching within that. It's so much fun. If anybody wants to go for Halloween, I highly suggest it.
That's awesome.
You will turn into a werewolf. You will have a blast. You've never laughed as much as you will in this class. It's so fun. And that's at the Actors Connection. So you go to actorsconnection.com and search the class.
Cool. Perfect. Well, thank you again, and we end every episode with a little sign-off, and that is the line of "There's more to cut." Feels even more. It feels horror-related today, saying it in front of you. But there, so if you could, so if you could just grace the podcast with reminding people that there's more to cut.
There is more to cut.
Thank you.
Yummy, yummy, yummy! I got love in my tummy, and I feel like I'm loving you. Love you, such a sweet thing, good enough to eat thing, and it's just a while.